Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. Of course, you know who I am. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I was speaking backstage with a guest, and I already know this show is going to be magical. This show is a show you definitely don't want your friends to miss out on, so go ahead and share this show, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So I'm going to introduce our first guest, and I was really intrigued by our first guest's mission, as well as their motto and what it says on their website. Valerie Jennings, who's the co-owner of The Online Business Guru, who says, "We get in the trenches so you don't have to." Good morning, Valerie. How are you?
Good morning. Doing wonderful. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
You are so welcome. You are co-owner of this business. Tell us a little bit about The Online Business Guru.
Sure, of course. My business partner, Jonna, and I have been in business now for over 14 years in the online world. And we have been helping professionals and local businesses basically run their companies and showing them what they need, what systems they need in place, implementing those systems for them, helping them hire the right people for their teams, and really showing them the way and the best ways to online market their businesses, whether it be email marketing or through social media marketing.
Now, 14 years to you may not seem like a big deal, but it's something that I definitely want to applaud you on, because most businesses suffer within the first 2 years or so, I say, maybe 2 to 5 years. But then a lot of people have a different idea as far as being online. Some people still have the mentality that if you get a website, then you'll make $1 million online, because everybody's making millions on the web. But can you just tell us briefly about your story, what made you decide to come up with the company, and even some of the highlights and the challenges that you experienced?
Of course, I'd be glad to. Basically, we fell into this. I moved roughly 20 years ago. I moved from Miami to Mexico. My parents ended up buying some property here, and I didn't want them to come alone. So I ended up opening up a computer repair business in the town that we were located at, and built that business up, and basically it overwhelmed me. Fortunately, I ended up running into, by fate, into my business partner, and we immediately hooked up, took on the business together, and built the business way over 3,400 clients. And then my mother ended up getting sick. She ended up having an aneurysm, which was inoperable, and we decided at that point, families first. So we took a pause, we took care of her until she passed, and then decided that, you know, we were approaching the 40s at that point in time, and maybe it was not the smartest decision to be climbing underneath desks to fix computers.
So, I know that feeling well.
So we are geek specialists. I mean, we love the geeky stuff, and it just fell into hands. So we ended up getting certified, and we started small. We started off with a free website and took small steps, but we knew we invested back into the business. So we told ourselves for every dollar we made, 15% of it was going to be put aside to invest back into the business so that we could continue to succeed. So as we built up enough money to get our first domain name, we did that. And then we ended up saving up for the hosting. And then we saved up so that we could get the training. And we took every YouTube free training there is, but we also knew that it was important to get certified. And if you're going to be into the geek world, you have to have some sort of expertise and credentials to show it. So, and I come from a military background, Jonna comes from a military background. So for us, those credentials and ethics are very important to us. So we ended up doing that. And now we have over 16 certifications and trainings, and we've got another one this year, which we're doing for Entreport. So it's take your time, know that it's a process. This is not going to be a race. It's a marathon. It's going to take years. And if you don't rush it or overexpend or overexceed yourself, you should be able to survive in the online world.
I definitely agree. I love the whole trenches aspect. I just love that word, trenches, because so often, you know, you're trying to operate a business, and then you may have this consultant or someone else, or maybe this corporation who is operating from a different view, but they're not here hands-on. They're just kind of giving you a high level. Maybe these are the things that you need to do. So what made you decide to come up with "We Get in the Trenches with You"? And what exactly does that mean?
Well, basically, we offer done-for-you services. It's easy for a consultant to say, oh, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And then you're left with all these wonderful, great ideas, but don't know how to hire the person to do it, don't have a clue of what you should look for, have no clue on what software you need to do that. And it can be overwhelming. And there's so many people out there, especially in the virtual assistants world, and I hate to say it because I was in it for so long, that are all affiliate marketers that are willing to sell their client on anything whatsoever just so they can make an affiliate dollar. And it's become that way. And we don't work that way. Money is great and wonderful, but it's not what motivates us. What motivates us, and we keep our client base very small, we keep it down to 10 people, that's it, because it allows us to really get to know our people, know our clients, know their needs, know their business, know what their voice is, and understand how to represent them the best way we can. So in the trenches is exactly what we do. We do all the behind the scenes work. So we not only sit there and tell you what we think the best courses of paths are for marketing or sales pages or what you should be selling or ways that you can find income, we actually then take those ideas and implement them for you so that you don't have to worry about it. All you have to do is just sit back and do what your expertise is. So whether if you're a coach, then you're going to be a coach. If you run a landscaping business, you don't have to worry about the marketing side of it. Let us worry about that and you worry about your business. And that's what in the trenches really means for us.
I like that example. One of the things that you said and you really emphasized is that we know our customers. We know our customers. I've seen a trend over the last, I won't even give it a specific year, but maybe the past 10 years for certain companies to move away from the customer service aspect and more into the, for lack of a better term, FAQ type of business model where you just go online, find the answer. What does, how does your business get to know its clients and build their relationship?
I'm glad you asked that. We are different in the sense we don't outsource any of our work. So it is Jonna and I that do it. So when you hire us, you hire either Jonna or I based on, I mean, we have two different personalities. So we have an interview with both of the, with the client, and the client picks who they want. And that's completely, I mean, we've switched midway between, because sometimes you just have clashes of minds. It's personalities, you know, or there's something, you know, there's a certain aspect that, you know, John and I always collaborate back and forth. And that's the beauty of us. In fact, you know, the funny thing is every time we do a personality test, we're actually symbiotic completely on everything. So it's almost like a perfect, you know, it was a fate partnership and it works beautiful. So since we don't outsource anything, since we're not interested in making $10 million and listening to all those people, and there's a lot of firms out there that, you know, hire 100 people or have a goal of making a $10 million, you know, we're just not. We're interested in having a small client base. We, you know, we treat our clients like family. You know, we're there for the wins. We celebrate the birthdays. We celebrate all that. So this allows us, since we are one-on-one with our clients, it really allows us to know that person. And it is, it's a family for us.
I love it. Wonderful answer. I have a few more questions, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest, and we'll definitely come back to you. Our next guest has been writing since he was a child. He has a new book out. It is called Look Up With Your Mind. And let me introduce Mr. Julius Carl Frank Sr. Good morning, Julius. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, everyone. Good to see everyone.
Good to see you. Thank you for being here. You held up that book, but like, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, actually, the cover is a person with stars looking up. And that's what I told my publisher I wanted. I wanted a person, the frame of a mind, a person actually looking up, because looking up is a thing you always want to do. You don't want to look down. You want to look up. Keep moving forward. Hold your head up high. Be positive. Look to the future. And they did a wonderful job, and I'm very impressed.
It kind of reminds me of the Twilight Zone in a way. I don't know why, but it just has that Twilight Zone kind of
stars. And it's funny that you said that, because that was one of my favorite shows growing up. I definitely loved that show.
It was one of my favorites, not only growing up, but still to this day. Sometimes my family and I will get together and watch the Twilight Zone marathons.
And, you know, and it's funny because I always say life imitates art. And sometimes it's like we're living in a twilight zone. I used to read a lot of Stephen King, and Stephen King couldn't have wrote this any better. Mm-hmm. It's better than the Stephen King book. The whole virus, we got the president that's out of control. We got different things going on at the same time. Stephen King couldn't have wrote this any better.
But he usually does thrillers and like some, you know, a lot of gore and different things like that. I wouldn't really, just me personally, attribute this to Stephen King. I have to kind of find more James Patterson. Like, I think this is more James Patterson, if I were to pick. But I definitely agree. But you mentioned that you've been writing since you were, what, middle school?
Yes, I've been writing since I've been in middle school. And I actually missed my calling, which a lot of people do, and they call it wasted talent. I actually should be writing for the New York Times or some fancy magazine, because that was my talent back then. And I'll tell any young person, whatever you like, whatever you're good in, pursue that. Don't let no one steer you into a direction that doesn't make you feel comfortable. And that's the advice I didn't get. I was good at writing. Pursue that, young man.
No, I agree, but let me just, I love your perspective, you know, because I see it, but I'm like, with you, it seems like I'm there like 99%. But I'm one of those people that until it's over, it's never over. I live by that philosophy. I mean, you see people at 90 years old that go back to school and get their high school diploma or whatever it is. So why can't someone say that, like me, for instance, go write, young man, like go. I saw an article just today. This is one reason I'm so passionate. The Washington Post, you might Google it, but the Washington Post is looking for new Black writers. And one of the main reasons is they said they haven't been really given a voice to the Black community, but so they want new writers to come in. It could be an opportunity. I saw the same thing here where I am in Long Beach, California. The Long Beach Post opened up an editorial board to make sure that the voice that they're giving represents all people. So it may be time for you to put that pen to paper and make something else happen.
Yeah. And I totally agree also with your perspective, because when I was 55 years old, a couple years ago, I climbed that second most climbed mountain in the world, and people were telling me, don't do it. Go sit down. You're going to get hurt. Watch your back. I did it. And also with the Boston Marathon, the 26.2 miles, that wasn't just like getting up, walking to the corner or walking around the block. That was a serious endeavor. Mm-hmm. So it's true, you're never too old and it's never too late to keep pursuing.
Yes. So let's go back to the mountain. And you climbed the mountain at 55?
Yes. And that was the second most climbed mountain in the world.
What is the name of the mountain?
Mount Monadnock in Jaffrey, New Hampshire.
Okay. So this the whole entire reason I created this show is just to get the backstory between how everything happened. So what happened? What made you decide to climb this mountain at 55?
Actually, I have a bucket list, and that was on my bucket list. So I was happy to check that off. And it was something that I had a missed opportunity when I was going to college in New Hampshire. A group of the students climbed the mountain, but I overslept and missed the bus. So I felt like I had to go back and take care of that. Plus I had this bucket list thing I'm trying to do, and I feel good. And it feels good when you accomplish something that people don't think you can do. And even yourself, sometimes you doubt yourself and you say, can I really do that? But once you do it, that takes you to another level within yourself.
I think that's wonderful. And I think I would have probably used that term for the rest of my life for missed opportunities. I would say I missed the bus. So whatever opportunities I didn't take, you know, it was just missing that bus sometimes can change your life. I have more questions for you, Julius, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is also an example of someone who wouldn't let society delegate, determine what she was going to do. She made her own path. Linda Baron-Katz suffered from mental illness. Also, her mother suffered from mental illness, but she's been utilizing her life, her message, and her story to help her peers. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
All right. Good morning. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for having us on being on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us your story, Linda, because it was very intriguing to me.
Mental illness has been a factor most of my life. My mother was the first one in the family to experience depression. I was about 10 years old. My mom was sort of in denial a little bit, and she didn't like to take her medicine, and she would throw them away, and she hated her to work. And when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I feared that I would become like my mother. And then my psychiatrist said to me, "You are not your mother. You are you." That changed my whole life, those words. And so I decided to stay in mental health for a while and become a peer specialist and help other peers, people with mental illness, recover and work on their journey and their goals. And so I've done that for a couple of years. The best job that I had as a peer specialist was at the Jewish board. And I loved every minute of it. I was helping seniors who had mental health issues. But what I mostly was doing was conducting groups, because I always loved teaching. I always had this teaching component inside of me. I guess it was because after watching my father in his Hebrew school as a principal teach Hebrew, and I also wanted to be a teacher when I was young, but I had a lot of fears in going into teaching, because I felt like I didn't have the authoritative, the disciplinarian, or the control of a classroom. And so I went, when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, it was after graduation from college and not being sure what career I wanted to take. So I went into mental health because it was the only place that I felt that I could be accepted.
Linda, let me ask you this question. One of the things that you mentioned is your psychologist said to you, "You are not your mother, you are you." And you said that statement alone changed your life and changed your perception. I know sometimes when you're watching or learning from another person's story, the specific how that change happened can help those people. So what are some of the things that you did to say, "I am not my mother, I'm me"?
Because I like to work. I like to keep busy. My mom didn't like to work. She didn't like to keep busy. She hated work. I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to sit idly at home and sleep all day. My mother slept all day. And I didn't want that for myself. And so I decided to go into a field that where I would be accepted, and not only that, help others as well. And I've done that. But since the COVID-19 pandemic, I had to, in a way, stop doing that.
And we'll talk about the COVID-19 momentarily, but I just wanted to ask you a question. And this really is just for the learning process of it all. You said that you didn't, your mother slept all day. You didn't want to do that. Your mother didn't want to work. You wanted to work. Some people believe with mental illness that it's not a choice, that you can't just make a decision not to sleep all day or not to work. It's part of the illness. What would you say to that?
I feel sometimes it is part of the illness, but you gotta sometimes you gotta force yourself to make things happen in life, and it can be very hard for some, and for others, I have my own. I can take my sister, for example. She doesn't want to admit till now that she has a mental illness. She doesn't want to take medication. She doesn't understand recovery. She thinks I'm more sicker than me, than her. And right now she has a guardian taking care of her financially, her financial needs. And she not working, so she's not doing much with her life and anything. And I haven't been able to communicate with her. It's very hard on families to watch their loved ones deteriorate. Very hard. And so I know how that other side is. But for those who are in recovery, you have to keep with the faith, and faith in God is very important. A lot of people with mental illness lose their faith in God. And, we all make choices in life. And some people with mental illness who cannot admit, who cannot accept it, who stay in denial, they've made that choice for themselves.
Very interesting. I'm learning a lot. I have a couple more questions for you, Linda. I want to go over to Valerie for a minute, and then we'll come back to you. One of the questions I have for you, Valerie, is I want to discuss COVID-19 and the pivoting. And so you work with at least 10 clients. What are some of the things that you saw over the last 4 months as far as these, how it COVID-19 affected these businesses, and what your recommendations were as far as that pivot?
Sure, great question. I think it's very easy to have people lock the brakes. And we had that. We had that absolute deer in the headlights freeze. I don't want to do anything whatsoever. I don't want to spend any money. I don't want to do anything. And it was walking them off the cliff. It was, telling them it's okay. You can spend money now. We don't have to spend a whole bunch, but you can't disappear. There's a lot of free stuff. This is one of them, podcasts, visibility. There's enough things out there that you can still do to keep your name and your message and serve your audience one way or another. And even your local businesses, if you were a restaurant, it was now thinking outside the box. Okay, you have people come in. So how are we going to do it now? And being able to understand that you have to think outside the box at this point. This is crucial. You need people in your corner that's going to guide you to other ways of thinking to get your business still working, still making money. Mm-hmm. And I think that once they understood that, and they realized that, okay, this is going to be a long thing, because a lot of people thought this was only going to last for a couple of weeks and it was going to go away. And now they've, realized this is not going to go away for, possibly a year. Some people are saying, experts are saying 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So now it's, let's go in for the long game plan. What are we really going to do? What can we accomplish? In some cases, it's walking back your goals. I mean, some people had a financial goal of making $1 million. Mm-hmm. And you have to come to the reality that you may not make that $1 million. So what's the new goal? What's our new plan of attack? The January 1st was an entirely different view of the world and the businesses. Mm-hmm. than it is today. So I think, you know, most business owners need to sit back and say, okay, I'm here now, we're in June, we're at the 6 month mark. So let's plan the next 6 months, not based on what it was, but what it is today and what's realistic. So you set yourself up for success instead of setting yourself up for failure.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the questions I love to ask my marketing and PR people is, did you advise any clients or did you make any changes yourself to the messaging? Because what I saw just by watching social media and by watching television, that companies came with more softer approach to messaging, to more of a, I'm here of service. I'm here to be of service. I'm here to help. You know, I always joke or laugh about the Verizon Wireless commercial that was running. I don't know if it's still on now. But one of the things they emphasized is that we are here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on VerizonWireless.com to serve you. And I'm like, okay, but wasn't VerizonWireless.com there before 24 hours a day? But it was just the messaging, you know, from these companies started to change. Would you agree, disagree?
I think personally, you know, it's like you just said, if the messaging sounds false, I mean, let's be real. Everybody's trying to jump on this, oh, feel good bandwagon. Mm-hmm. And some companies can get away with it because they stay true to their own brand. Mm-hmm. Those are people that you know. I mean, like a Coca-Cola always has the Christmas feel good messages and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you expect them to do a feel good message during this time. It's expected of them and you believe that messaging. But it's pretty false. Like you have the Northern commercial where they're now producing toilet paper and they're around the clock and they're doing this. It doesn't sound like it's real. It tries to make them feel good. It's good for PR. But I always tell my businesses, don't go stepping offside your brand to a point where it becomes unbelievable or the people think that you're just trying to make money. I know some people, we had one email I had come in on Memorial Day was talking about the freedoms and fighting and everything else. And then said, you know, at the end, oh, well, now it's time to, you know, to make your business free and try to go into a spiel to sell. Well, to me, that's offensive. I'm a military brat. I know people who died on the field, you know, so that's offensive to me to try to sell during that time. That's a solemn moment to try to make money during COVID only because you're trying to take advantage of people, I think is false. And I think people can see you and know who you are. You know, we've always stand behind our brand. We have always, you know, made, if people don't like their work, we don't charge them. And people know that of us. If nothing else, anybody who's ever worked with us in the past or the present, you know, can tell you that we stand by our word, we're ethics, and, you know, and that's what we stand by. It's not all about the money. And they know that. So when we tell people that we, you know, we understand and we're going to discount our pricing, it doesn't look like we're discounting our pricing because we're trying to sell them on something. We're discounting the pricing because they know what it is. And we do a lot of stuff like we're doing, you know, a lot of free stuff right now, just so that people have the tools that they need to keep working. Because if they don't have the tools that they need to keep working, they're going to close up and be a victim of, you know, the estimated 1 million, you know, 1 million businesses that are expected to close in the next 5 months, which to me is scary. I mean, that's a whole new environment.
Yes. So you mentioned your businesses and your clients and their message. Were you always working remotely? Were you in the office? How has this affected your business in particular?
For us, ironically, we were talking about the other day, we never saw staying at home as a prison cell because we did. I mean, that's what we do. We stay at home. Our house is our refuge and we built our home as a refuge and we don't see it as a prison cell. We love our home. You know, we have a gym downstairs. We built a gym. So, you know, we knew that going out and doing gym work for us was taking away from the family. So we do it as a family together in the gym room. So we just never saw it. And I see on the messages of, you know, oh, I'm going to go stir crazy. I'm going to do this, but we live in a community where we can walk in. So we go outside and we go walking and we walk the dogs and we do see people. And most of our interaction is via Zoom videos like this or via phone calls. So it wasn't such a disconnect. Yes, I miss going to the movies. And yes, I get to miss my happy hours and that type of physical contact. But you know, we this too shall pass. It's like everything else. So we never saw it that difficult because this is what we've always done. I mean, this is what we do. We sit at home and we work for people and people know that we're available.
That's one, when I say the same thing as far, you know, because I work from home and people always want to schedule appointments. And I'm like, you know what? It doesn't always have to be that serious. Just give me a call. I'm here. That's mm-hmm. why I'm here, to be available to people. I don't like to get my calendar all booked up. That infuriates me because I might want to do something else. That's just me.
Right. Exactly. Which is why, I mean, with technology today, you could do that. I mean, we have WhatsApp and we have chat and we have Skype and we have email and we have all sorts of ways. And we always tell, you know, I have one client that likes to write a book to me, an email. And it's like, you know, if you pick up the phone, you can talk to me and we can solve it out in 3 minutes.
Yes. Yes. That old fashioned back in the day, that's what we used to do. A lot of people forget, like, you can't pick up the phone and call without a scheduled appointment. And people are like, well, what if you're busy? What if you're unavailable? I'm like, then I won't answer, but I will call you back. You know what I mean? It's like, that's kind of how the phone works.
Yeah, that is true.
But we need more communication. I want to go over to Linda because I want to share your experience. You started to tell us about your experience with COVID-19.
Yes. Ever since COVID-19 pandemic, I've been working remotely from home and just monitoring and making phone calls to clients in the adult home. And that really wasn't something that I was trained in doing, and really was getting, the calls were getting really repetitive, and some clients couldn't come to the phone, and it was very different. Mm-hmm. And even though part of me liked working from home, I didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the love that I like doing, running groups, teaching, educating, wasn't there anymore. So lately I've been thinking a lot about my father's role in Jewish education and how I had liked teaching, how I liked being a part in the classroom setting, how I missed that. And so I decided to evaluate myself, because there aren't that many peer specialist positions out there that I could do right now. Most of them involve a lot of traveling into Manhattan or Brooklyn. Nothing situated in Queens anymore. So let me
ask you this, Linda. How do you remain positive with all that going on? Your life has changed. You used to, because it seems to me, this is just me kind of assuming and guessing, because I kind of try to get a feel for people, is I would believe that part of the reason why you like the groups is you like the human interaction, you know, talking to people, working with people. It's the people that makes, you know, that the process so enjoyable. And so now you're quarantined by yourself. So, I mean, what are the things that you do to remain positive? Because, you know, I'm speaking to the experts, and one of the main things that they say is that people are suffering from depression and anxiety because their whole world did a 180 and they don't know what to do. So how do you remain positive?
Well, I tell you, I decided to do some volunteer work for the meantime. Mm-hmm. So I started volunteering at this daycare center. Mm-hmm. And the kids are 3-4 years old, and I'm helping out the teacher, the director, a lot. And she's showing me all these things. And You know, it's a wonderful feeling being with the kids. It's very rewarding. It makes me happy. It makes me fulfillment. Like I'm helping the kids. I'm helping them read, say things in Hebrew, like, what's this? What's this? Mazet, mazet. Zera Kevit, this is a train. It's wonderful.
What's the round table talk show? How do you say that in Hebrew?
Oh God, I'm not fluent that much in Hebrew.
I just try to throw that out there. I always try to learn something else.
Was fluent. I think this is a direction I'm gonna go into. Mm-hmm. Right now, and maybe eventually I may want to get a childhood development associate certificate.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be wonderful.
I think that would be wonderful. I miss teaching in any way I can, and I think it's something working in a Jewish preschool or Jewish Hebrew school, I think my father's memory would be really honored, and that in a way he loved that, to see his daughter sort of following in his footsteps a bit.
I think that is beautiful. When you talk about it, your smile, you just smile and your eyes light up. I think it's beautiful, and I can definitely see you doing that. I will come back to you, have a couple more questions. I want to head over there to Julius. How you doing? You hanging in there with us?
Yes, I sure am. And it's good to hear other perspectives, and Linda and Valerie, you guys, it's good to hear your perspective. It's really good.
What stood out to you?
Well, I like the fact that, Linda is still thinking about her dad, because I'm an only child myself and I lost my mom years ago. Hmm. So to want to do something for your mom or your dad and to try to keep their memory going, I think it's very good. And I like Valerie's perspective and her partner, because they're helping people through a tough situation. They're not trying to get over or make money, like she said, off this virus. They're trying to do something positive, and that's coming from their heart. And it shows there are still people out here who have goodness in their hearts. And I like to be around people like that. Those are the kind of people you want to be around, good-natured people, not trying to hurt you or take advantage of you in a bad situation.
That is so wonderful. I think you have a good heart as well. I want to hear about, when did your book come out?
My ebook came out May 1st, mm-hmm. 2020, and my paperback came out May 14th, 2020, and that's available in Barnes & Noble and Amazon in the ebook format, and it's available on bookbaby.com in paperback and ebook. And there's a deal going on too. If you buy it from Book Baby, you can get both of those for a deal. They do some kind of deal. I think it's $23. And those are for people who like to read it on their tablet or smartphone and who may want a personal copy, because it is a beautiful copy. You know what I mean?
So it is beautiful. It is beautiful. Now, what
I kind of look at this book like a sandwich, because I'm an avid reader. I like to read and I'm interested in knowledge and learning, and not just this type of book. I read about the Aztec Indians. I read about Greek mythology. I think a book is like a sandwich. The outside may look good, but does it have any filling? Is it going to fill you up? And I think my book will give you something to think about. It'll open your eyes. And there's also a sense of enlightenment when you read my poems. You take a few seconds and you think, yes, I can see what he's trying to say.
So it's multiple poems in the book?
Yes. And back to Linda, you know, you had mentioned that believing in God is very good. I'm a missionary at my church. There's several poems in my book praising God and uplifting God and letting people know that no matter what you go through, God is there. He's already there and he's looking out for you. All you got to do is say, I believe.
What inspired you to actually publish the book as well as publishing a book in the middle of COVID-19?
I've always wanted to write a book and publish it. It's just that God has everything planned in his own time. So I was busy doing other things, raising a family, climbing a mountain, doing this and doing that. But doing it now was a good time for me because my book is very inspirational and uplifting. And this book, if I can just get one person to see something in this book and feel better, I'm happy. And also, I'd like to tie in my book with what happened in Montgomery, Alabama. I'm from Birmingham, but if I sell 300 copies, I put it at 300 because that's how many days the Montgomery boycott lasted. So I'm not only in the middle of a coronavirus, an unemployment rate, and a racial thing. Now I'm tying my book into all of that, so I can also be a part of history, because history is very important. And if you don't be careful, we're gonna keep doing a recycle. And that's something we don't wanna do, is keep recycling history over and over. Because we're all gonna go. No one is better than anyone else. We may have a little bit more, but we're all human.
Do you have a short poem for us?
Yes, I do.
Brief poem, rather.
And I call this poem, All the Laws. Wishing upon a star, trying to find out just who you are. Wondering in solitude, if it's all a dream, is it true? The world is so out of place, or so it seems. It's like going up and not coming down. It defies all the laws. Just like Christopher Columbus was trying to prove that the world was round, when everyone knew it was only upside down. People often say, where did I go wrong? But they seldom ask, where did I go right? Because the moon in the sky is not always full, but neither are the stars in the sky always bright. It seems as though things are not exactly as they appear. That's why the world is so out of place and people live in constant fear. It's like getting up in the morning and not washing your face. It defies all the laws.
What did you think about that, Valerie?
Great. That really is inspirational. Definitely.
Thank you very much. Linda. It's always good to get positive feedback in sometimes such a negative world. And that's what I try to do, is to have a smile for someone. When I go to the store, I always say please and thank you, because you don't know what the other person's going through. So please and thank you. Even though I'm buying them from them, I think it's a good thing. And it's an olive branch to everyone we come in contact with, to reach out an olive branch in this difficult time.
Definitely.
I think that's beautiful. And I do the same thing in a different sort of way. When I use the whole, you don't know what the other person is going through, I try to do that in traffic. You know, when somebody cuts me off or they speed by or they have to get in front of you, I'm like, you never know. Maybe they had to get to the hospital. Maybe, you know what I mean? You never know, because they may be in the car, be like, I'm trying to get to the hospital and these people won't move, you know? So I go, you know what? Whatever they had to do was obviously more important than what I had to do or where I had to go. So I just, you know, relax and let them move, let them go. What did you think of the poem, Linda?
I thought it was terrific. I especially, there were a few parts to it. I don't understand poetry too well, I have to say, but I feel like your writing in poetry, the poem really brought out a lot of your passion in writing, and also things about what you said about your faith in God, believing in that too. I think that also showed out in the poem. And when you write, it's like you're writing about something that you're passionate about, that you know about, that you love about yourself. And I think that's what your poem showed. It showed you. It showed who you are and what type of person you are.
That was so beautiful. I enjoyed that.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you very much. You're a poet. We're all poets, like Bob Dylan.
You don't want to hear me write poems. Like, the best I can do is the Cat in the Hat. Sam, I am. Like, that's the extent of what I do.
I did it years ago, but I've been out of it for a long time.
Yeah.
I've won a couple of poetry awards when I was in high school, and I was won a lot of journalistic awards. So nice. I can.
But do you think, Valerie, that's kind of interesting, because one of the things that we often discuss on the show is that we have something we enjoy as a child. Yesterday, they said it's usually between the ages of 7 and 9. And whatever that thing that we love or we enjoy, somehow, some way, that usually becomes our career. And I always talk about my cousin. I should be a better cousin and know what channel it is. But he's on like CBS or NBC or ABC. He's a reporter on television on a major channel in Columbus, Ohio. But he's, you know, 40-ish. But when he was 9 years old, he would walk around the house and interview the family with a spoon. Mm-hmm. Like at 9, that, you know, and now as an adult, he's a journalist. So we always keep some kind of aspect. For me, I love to talk. Now I'm a talk show host. So Valerie, you love to write. You love poetry. Yeah. Does that help you? Or do you feel that maybe you're writing collateral or writing content for a client? Do you see that come up?
Well, the irony is journalists is what I wanted to go into. I wanted to go into a reporter and stuff. And I had David Brinkley actually came to our college, and I was one of his escorts. And we were talking about journalism and doing some stuff. And he had said, I'm going to be really honest and frank with you. He says, I wouldn't even tell my daughter or my dog, who is a female, to go into the journalistic world right now, because it's just so nasty. And he said, you know, unless you're really willing to pay those type of dues, then you should use your writing in other aspects of it. And I ended up going into advertising. That's what I ended up moving my writing into. And I love it just as much. And of course, you know, in the job that I'm doing now, it's sales pages, which is still advertising. It's just off the digital world. Mm-hmm. You know, I do some blog writing, and I do some other writings, and that's always been a part, but I found out how to use it to my advantage, because I had already had, you know, women can't do this and women can't do that, and you should sit there and be quiet. And, you know, I've already had that in my workforce, and I didn't want to continue to be subjected to those type of comments and discriminations and that type of stuff. So I didn't see that so much in the advertising world. The women's perspective was always welcomed, because so many products are geared to women buying. So it's welcomed, and it's a different environment than it is in the journalistic world.
Mm-hmm. Because as shoppers, women, we are the buyers. We're the one that typically buy for, you know, it's very rare that the husband goes out and buys the wife's clothes, but it's quite often that the wife goes out and, you know, buys the husband's wardrobe, buys the children's wardrobe. So a lot of advertising is focused towards the women. So let me ask you this. You mentioned that being a journalist, that was a whole nasty industry. Do you feel that with blog writing, do you take that into account? Meaning, do you try to not be controversial? That's kind of what I'm saying. And to be clear that, you know, you don't want to write anything that can be perceived as nasty in any way, to just write what you feel.
I think controversy has its moments and it has its place. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the business world, you have to be very careful of that fine line. You know, you see it now with the Black Lives Matter. How many companies messed up their messaging, even though with the intention, the intent was good, but the way they said it was wrong, or it offended somebody. I think that's important to realize that there's a place. So it's very important to, if you're going to cover today's controversy or controversial messaging, that you leave a forum available for other people to talk. You just don't put something, if you're going to do a blog post, don't put a blog post in and refuse all comments so that your word's the last word. I think it's important if you want to hold a discussion, then open the blog post up and then hold a discussion for like this, a round table or something, to really make it purposeful other than throwing your two cents out there and then closing the book and saying, okay. I think that's important. I think that's a lot of the issues we have today is so many people throw their opinions out there. They don't want to talk to anybody else. That's their opinion. There is no discussion to it. And they close off, and that's where we are now. And that's where that hatred builds up. And, you know, this is my view and you're wrong and I'm right. And that ability to talk anymore and to discuss anymore without offending somebody has put a lot of people into fear. And that's wrong. People aren't asking you to be quiet. They're asking you to be heard and then give your point of view. And then, but you got to hear the other person's point of view as well and not shut them down.
I think that's deep. I think that's excellent advice. But from a marketing perspective, I don't know if you've had this discussion with either all or any of your clients to really give some thought to, you know, if you feel that you need to have a message. The reason that I say that is, for example, one of the companies that just came under fire was Starbucks. And they put out the message, no Black Lives Matter. We, you know, and their reason, which may sound logical to some people, is that we don't want any personal messaging. We don't want any type of political messaging. We don't want any message at all. We want your, you know, basically it could be just basically a color, you know, your mask is a color or whatever, but no message. And then you have people who argue back, but you were fine with the LGBTQ messaging. You know, and that's a message. It's not asking whether it's right or wrong, but it's a message that you allow people to put out there. So there's some type of discretion in what you allow us for your messaging. So sometimes, you know, from a marketing perspective or even from a PR perspective, I don't know how much of that you handle. Sometimes they say, you know, it's better to just not put out any message, because sometimes the message that you think is correct, you know, Twitter fear will tear you apart for.
Well, I think that the important thing is it a message that you believe in and that you're willing to stand behind? You're not just putting it out there because the masses expect you to do it. I think that's important. It's again, being true to who you are. If it, you know, there are people out there that have believed in racial injustice and corporations that have believed in it for years. So it makes sense for them to speak out now. It you know, it's like the Kaepernick thing, you know, now everybody's backing off and going, oh, well, maybe we were wrong. You know, Starbucks learned a lesson. Should we criticize them and say, oh my God, no, because this is about, you know, so you can't succeed without failures. It's just what it is. So it's okay for them to step back and say, oh, we made a mistake. We're wrong. We apologize if we offended anybody, and then take the corrective course of action. And they did. So I applaud them. But, and I don't think that they came out with anything to hurt anybody. I think they just decided that at that point in time, they didn't want a political issue. It's not that they didn't believe in the injustice. They just didn't want it politicized. And there's a lot of corporations that don't want to get into the political environment, especially now. It's very dangerous because you've got that attack. That's the first thing everybody sees now, is to pounce and attack. And I think, you know, if you freeze on your messaging and you believe it's important that you say it, it's okay to say it. Say it, stand behind it, say why you believe in it, and you're probably going to offend somebody. Trust me, there's billions of people out there. You're going to offend somebody. But if you believe in your messaging and you believe on what it says, then stand behind it with the integrity of who you are. It's, and if you find out from somebody else's point of view and you listen to the messaging and you understand what they have to say, then you can change. We can all learn. There's nothing wrong with learning. We all have our own little worlds that we live in, and our whole history is based off of what we have been taught by family, mentors, our friends, and that little world that we work with. It's hard to understand how somebody else sees the world. You know, when I went to school in Spain, I saw the world as an entirely different spot of the U.S. and the history that was happening during the Ronald Reagan years, because I saw it from where I was standing, not where the U.S. was. So I saw an entirely different message. And I think that's important. The people, everybody here is to teach somebody else something. And if we're willing to listen and learn, we can speak our minds. There's nothing wrong with that. You can go out and be political if you want to be political, but stand behind your values and be willing to listen to the other person's point of view without pouncing on them and saying, you're wrong, this is what it is, and closing down.
You're interesting. This is not a business perspective question. I just really want your perspective on it. There are other people who are losing their jobs, careers, livelihood for saying all lives matter. But that's what they believe, and that's what they stand behind, and then their careers are gone.
Well, I think what it is I think the messaging of all lives matters gets lost. The Black Lives Matter doesn't mean that Black lives are more important. It means that there's an injustice in the system. And it always has been there. I was a paralegal. I've seen it. I've walked away from it because I couldn't stand the injustice. It is a terrible injustice of what happened. And when you listen to reporters and stuff talk about they had to have the talk with their son as a Black parent, I mean, that's horrible. They have a word, the talk. I mean, that's horrible. The talk should be about the birds and the bees. It shouldn't be about whether or not you're going to live on the streets or get killed by a police officer. I mean, there's something wrong with our world if Black parents have to be raised with generations of having the talk of what's appropriate to say to a white society. I mean, that's a horrible thing to say. And to me, it's not saying that, like I said, it doesn't say that all lives don't matter, but it does say that one particular class has been intolerating stuff. And it doesn't mean that there's not all of them, because the Indians have been mistreated horribly. The immigrants have been, the migrants that have come over to the States have been treated horribly as well. So yes, they all matter as well. But I think if we can fix one, in turn, we fix them all. Because if we base laws, because the laws aren't going to just say Black lives or Black this or Black that. The laws are going to say all people or all injustice or all minorities. And I think that's what the important message should be.
I think that was well said. We are coming down to the last 2 minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to our audience, to everyone who's watching this show live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and really let them know what you would like for them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Linda.
Hey, I just want everyone to know that everyone has a chance to make their own choices in life, to succeed, to get better. If you have a mental illness, focus on your goals, focus on what you want in life. Don't let fear stand in your way. You have what it takes, and there are plenty of choices out there. And you know, my definition of recovery is always to live life. And there's no other way I can describe it, because recovery and from mental illness is about living life. And sometimes you have to focus on a different career, and that's okay. That's okay. Sometimes it's a good thing to change your career in your 50s, let's say, which is what I am, 51 years old right now. But, you know, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's good to explore other paths in life. Just, you want to do something you love doing. You want to
live life
you're passionate about.
And I think that's beautiful. Live life. Live life. Definitely love that. Julius, what do you have for us?
I just want to say, check out my new book, bookbaby.com, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. I want to wish everyone safety, happiness, and longevity.
Yes, thank you. Valerie?
Do what you love, love what you do.
Amen. Definitely words to live by. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. Amazing shows this week. If you missed any of them, you definitely want to check them out either on our YouTube page or on facebook.com/the Roundtable Talk Show. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.